We told the sinners that we have sinners.
Preparing lunch, for Abraham's heavenly visitors. Women like Hannah praying in the temple for a son. The women have always been there. Women like Miriam, the prophetess, and song leader. Women like Abigail, the wise-hearted peacemaker. The women have always been there. Women like Rahab, the heroine of Jericho, and Esther putting her life in jeopardy for the security of her people. Women like Rachel the beautiful and Leah the tender eye. The women have always been there. Women like Gomer, the unfaithful wife in the book of Hosea. Women like the widow of Zarephath, into whose humble dwelling Elijah came, and she was about to prepare the last meal. And Elijah said to her, make me a little cake first. And she baked him a cake first, and after that the meal didn't fail in the barrel, and the oil didn't fail in the vessel. The women have always been there. Women like the Shunammite, into whose home Elisha was wont to come. And she said to her husband, let us build an extra room so that when the man of God is in these parts, he will have a place in which to stop for rest and refreshment. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The husband agreed, and the room was built. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And for this act of kindness, Elisha implored God, and this couple was blessed with a child. Yes, sir. And the child followed his father into the field and was stricken with the fever. And the father had the child carried to his mother, and he lay on her knee until high noon and died. The mother told Elisha what had happened to the child. And Elisha took the child up to his room and stretched the child out on the bed and gave to the world of medicine its first lesson in mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. For he put his mouth to the child's mouth and stretched his body upon the child's body until his body waxed warm and he sneezed seven times. The women have always been there. Women like Sojourner Truth, enabling the slave ways to get away from the South and slavery to the North and freedom. Women like Jane Addams went down into the slums of Chicago and founded Hull House for Wayward Girls. The women have always been there. Women were there in the Old Testament, and women were there in the New Testament, in Cana of Galilee at the wedding. And women were there at Simon's house, and women were there at the house of Lazarus, and women were there at the grave of Lazarus. Women were there at the cross and at the tomb. And Luke has us to understand that a long time ago, the women were there on the street of sorrow. My brethren and sisters, there have always been the women. The women are always there, faithfully there. Now the men may or may not be there, but you can count on the presence of the women. They will be there, faithfully there, helpfully there, frustratingly there, sorrowfully there, needfully there, redemptively there, courageously there. They are always there. And this is something for which we can thank God. Women were there a long time ago, when some overwrought woman cried out the first note of Mary worship by saying, "Blessed be the womb that bare thee, and the paps that gave thee suck." The women have always been there. Luke tells us that there followed him a great company of people. And my imagination works with me here. I like to feel in that crowd of people, there was that blind man who once cried, "Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus gave him his sight. And I like to feel that in that crowd was the man who had been a cripple for 38 long years. And one happy day, Jesus told him, "Pick up your pallet and walk." And the man obeyed and went on his way walking. I like to think that in that crowd there was that one leper who turned back to thank Jesus for having given him his help. The other nine went on to show themselves to the priest, but one turned back to say thank you. There were crowds, said Luke, and I like to think that in that crowd there was the son of the widow of Nain, whom Jesus had brought back from there. They were all there in that crowd. But the women are there on the road of sorrow. And they saw Jesus so crossed by so cruelly treated until their hearts broke and their tears ran down. But they couldn't understand how it was or why it was that such a wonderful character as Jesus should be so cruelly treated. They had followed his life, his loves, and his labors. These women knew how Jesus had gone about doing good. They knew how he had gone about giving sight to the blind. They knew how he had gone about raising the dead. They knew how he had gone about cleansing the leper. They knew how he had gone about untying the knots in the tongue of the dumb. They knew how he had gone about taking the heat out of fever. They knew how he had gone about, yes, Lord, preaching the good news to the poor. And they could not understand how it was or why it should be that wicked men should treat him in such manner. And that tears began to flow freely. But Jesus turned to the women and said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, weep not for me, but we weep anyhow." Yeah, we feel that we must weep at anything passing by, so fair and so unfair. We feel that we must weep at anything passing by, so high and yet so low. We feel that we must weep at the contradictions in this life. And my brethren and sisters, who can fail to weep at contradiction? Who can fail to weep at inconsistencies? And we mean business with our weeping, but we must hear the master saying, "Weep not for me." Our brothers and sisters, no annual weeping in some sanctuary does any good. I do not preach tear-jerking Mother's Day sermons, because I believe that when your mother is living, you ought to give her love and respect. When your mother is living, you ought to do for her whatever you can do. And then when the Lord comes and takes her away, just thank him for having given her to you for the time that you did have. I have observed that most funerals, the most crying is done by those who have done the least for the deceased in life. No seasonal splurge of tears can make up for our lack of genuine commitment. Some of us are trying to cry it out for Jesus, but Jesus is not in need of our tears. He says, "Weep not for me." the object of his weeping. This means we must identify with the reason for which he was sacrificed. We must weep for that which makes God weep. Now, Jesus said, weep not for me. He does need our sympathy. He does need our service. He does need our sympathy. He does need our sacrifices. He does need our tears. He does need our testimony. He needs us to tell somebody else that we know that he is a wonderful Savior. He needs us to tell somebody else that we know that he is, Lord, is the world's only Savior. Now, there is a plenty for us to weep about. Lord, weep over the fact that there are 3,802,300 crimes committed annually in the United States. That's something to weep about. And we might weep over the fact that Los Angeles and Long Beach, California have the highest crime rate in the nation. This area had 4,117 crimes per 100,000 people. And we might weep over the fact that the top 10 cities with the highest crime rate are Los Angeles, Long Beach, California, New York City, Oakland, California, Miami, Florida, Baltimore, Maryland, Detroit, Michigan, Phoenix, Arizona, Augusta, Georgia, New Orleans, Louisiana, and Fresno, California. Well, if we were to weep, there are many things to weep about. We might weep over the fact that 7 serious crimes are committed each minute of the day and night. One murder is committed every 43 minutes. One rape is committed every 19 minutes. One aggravated assault is committed every 2 minutes. One robbery is committed every 2.5 minutes. One burglary is committed every 20 seconds. One larceny is committed every 30 seconds. One car theft is committed every 48 seconds. Jesus said to you and me, weep not for me, but weep for yourself and for your children. Yes, Lord. Now, even though we are not to weep for Jesus, we are to weep with him. For he wept over the sins of men. He wept over the lost and undone state of men. Yes, Lord, there is a proper weeping, and you and I ought to weep over the sins of men. A long time ago, Jesus wept over Jerusalem. Who weeps over the cities now? We have cities full of crime, and we have cities full of wickedness. We have cities, yes, Lord, whose streets are unsafe by day my mind. Every child of God ought to weep over the lost and undone state of men. Weep for lost dimensions and weep for racists and riots. Weep for hate and scandal. Weep for crime and ignorance. Weep for Vietnam and weep for Watts and Washington. Weep for Detroit and Newark. Weep for Memphis, Tennessee. Weep for Mississippi. Weep for Dallas, Texas. Weep for Los Angeles, California. And then weep over the fact that in a land of plenty, we have to have a resurrection city built at the nation's capital to highlight the plight of the poor. Yes, Lord. Weep for the three kings that went down by an assassin bullet. Kennedy, King, and Kennedy. Well, in this world, there's always something to weep over. Yes, Lord. I hear Jesus saying to the daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and weep for your children. And the same thing he told them, he's telling you and me. Well, weep for yourselves and then weep for your children. We've got to do something about the children, for our future is with the children. Yes, Lord. If we lose our children, we'll have no tomorrow. If we lose our children, there'll be nobody to make our dreams come true. If we lose our children, there won't be anybody to make our hopes come to fruition. If we lose our children, yes, Lord, our sacrifices will have been in vain. Weep for the children, instruct the children, for by and by the beast of the wild will be led by child, and there will be peace in the valley. Well, the writer of the 48th Psalm said, let Mount Zion rejoice, let the daughters of Judah be glad. And then it said, go around about and mark ye well her bulwarks, consider her palaces, that ye may tell it to the generation following. And then one day in the temple, the children came in crying, Hosanna, and somebody told Jesus, you ought to make them hurt, but Jesus said to these, hold at peace, the rock will cry out. Well, I don't know how you feel about it, but I don't want the rock to testify for me. I'm going to testify for myself. I'm going to tell the world I know he's all right. I know
initial spell
the response must be made on an individual basis. When you read this chapter, you will find that Moses did not set the bush on fire.
Yes, sir.
That was God's doing. God took the initiative. God made the appeal. And Moses responded. God didn't have to be introduced to Moses. God knew Moses. God knew his name. And God called his name. And Moses made an individual response. Hear him say, here am I. Here am I. God summons him. And he responds, here am I. Oh, God set a bush on fire. Wherever there is injustice, God sets a bush on fire. Wherever there are wrongs to be made right, God sets a bush on fire. Wherever man, in humanity to man, rears its ugly head, God sets a bush on fire. God had seen the affliction of his people. He had heard their cry. He knew their sorrow. So he set the bush on fire. He ties a divine intention to an earthly operation that resulted in a national liberation. God set a bush on fire. Yo, Dr. Mitchell, I want to say something else, but it's a little hard to get away from the bush. Because
A bush is a very ordinary thing. Who cares about a bush? It's a common thing. It's an insignificant thing. In most cases, the bush grows without any care. Bush grows without any nurturing. A bush grows unnoticed. A bush. And yet, when God gets ready to do a thing, he sets a bush on fire. I don't know how long that bush had been there. And I don't know why God chose that particular bush. He set a bush on fire. And the fire, set that bush apart from the rest of the bushes. It was the fire. The fire made that bush different from the rest of the bushes. The fire. It was the fire that got the attention of Moses. Why this bush is burning and is not consumed. Oh, brothers and sisters, God set that bush on fire, and he can set the most ordinary prison on fire. If you will respond to his appeal, God can take a nobody and make us somebody out of that nobody. God can take the most ordinary person and make that person a surprise to himself. And God can take the most ordinary person and make that person a surprise to others. Yes. You can see a person at one stage, and you may decide that that is a helpless and hopeless case. time, but be careful how you write people off. For when you write people off, God could intervene and set the bush on fire. Oh, brother, sister, be careful how you give up on people. Well, you see, God is not in the habit, Pastor McLean, in giving up on people. Yeah, you see, we are rather short on patience, but God is long suffering. And when others give up on us, when others write us off, God has a way of intervening. God has a way of setting that common bush on fire. And last time you saw that bush, it was just a bush. Yeah. Not a very promising bush in that. Just a bush. But while you slept, God set that common bush on fire. And you find yourself saying, I never would have thought that he would have done thus and so. Or I never would have thought that she would have amounted to thus and so. Oh, brothers and sisters, God does indeed move in mysterious ways. He wonders to perform. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rise upon the stars. Well, God set a bush on fire and got the attention of Moses. And he told Moses that he had seen something and that he had heard something and he knew something. And it says to Moses, I am come. Yeah. I am come to do something about what I've seen and what I have heard and what I know. Come now, Moses. I will send you to Pharaoh. And Moses is a little bit timid about taking the assignment. You hear Moses asking, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? Who am I that I should take this responsibility? Who am I? Well, Moses is overwhelmed. Yes, Moses is awestruck. Moses feels a deep sense of inadequacy. Who am I that I should accept this assignment? Who am I that I should go down in Egypt land and tell Pharaoh to let the
people go. Oh, who am I? Oh, brothers and sisters, notice that, that is a singular personal pronoun. Not who are we, but who am I? Well, sometimes we underestimate the ability of one person to make history. But I think I ought to tell you that every now and then God chooses to take one person and change the course of history. Every now and then God chooses to set one person on fire, and that person can go forth and change the course of history. Never get it in your mind that because you are just one, that there isn't anything that you can do. For as old priest told us, that God plus one is a majority in any situation. Well, who am I? When you read the chapter, Harry there, consider Moses' question, who am I? Well, I hear a man named John Knox asking, who am I? And the answer comes rolling back, he's the one that brought Scotland to a knee. Well, I hear another man asking, who am I? And the answer comes rolling back, and I'm Daniel the lion tamer that kept the head of the government from sleeping all night long. Well, who am I? And the answer comes rolling back, I'm Ezekiel, the hero of Death Valley, that went down in a valley. I didn't have a deacon board, I didn't have a trustee board, I didn't have a choir, I didn't have a musician. I just went down there and started preaching, and there was a resurrection in Death Valley. Oh, brothers and sisters, you know men, begin with an army and end up with bones. But God began with bones and ended up with an arm. Well, oh, brothers and sisters, long ago Moses said, who am I? Well, let the kick you too long. They ought to remind you that this Bible is a burning bush. It's been burning a long time. It hasn't burned up yet. It's been burning a long time. It hasn't been consumed. It's been burning a long time. Men have criticized it, but it's still burns. Men have disregarded it, but it still burns.
God had something to do with it.
Thank you. Gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make